The rendezvous between the rogues and cards people was characterized by a betrayal and by some extraordinary luck. The transfer was underway in the rubble graveyard that had been Alderaan. When the huge Interdictor cruiser sliced into space, the Corruptor then imposed its bulk between the cruiser aggregator and the rogue snub fighter. Wedge's pilots shattered the aft shields of the Corruptor with proton torpedoes, but the Star Destroyer immediately rolled and presented its starboard shields. Wedge ordered, "Corin, set up for the third run."
"I copy, Wedge. Lots of eyeballs out here."
Wedge brought his X-Wing up between the aggregator and the Corruptor. He got a good look at the damage the torpedoes had done to the destroyer and saw fire in the ship's interior. Tycho's voice boomed over the comm unit.
"On my mark. Get into firing position."
Right, Wedge thought. The pair of ties on his tail had no intention of letting him set up on the Corruptor. He brought the X-Wing's nose around on the track of a tie. Switching over to quad-fire lasers, he hit the trigger. The fighter went into a spin and arced out toward the system's outer orbit. More rudder brought the X-Wing around to point back up at the Corruptor. Wedge started forward as Tycho said,
"Mark, fire now."
But Wedge never pulled the trigger.
"Sith spawn. What is that?"
Wedge thought. A ship the size of a Carrick-class light cruiser ranged up from the Alderaanian graveyard, cutting past the aggregator's stern and in at the Corruptor's bridge. The ship's white nose was separated from the blood-red body by a big black stripe splashed on the diagonal. It was the same color scheme as Tycho's X-Wing. The cruiser opened up on the Corruptor with its weaponry. Wedge kicked his thrust in at full and rolled his X-Wing so he put the rubble graveyard over his head and the destroyer's hull beneath his fighter. He jinxed the ship, and the fighter behind him tried to target him, then hauled back on his stick. He saw one Imperial officer standing in the middle of the bridge viewport and watched his mouth open in surprise. Wedge hit the trigger. A pair of proton torpedoes stabbed through the transperisteel viewport, filling the bridge with blue fire. Sporadic turbo laser and ion cannon fire continued to come from the Corruptor, but far more numerous were the escape pods exploding from its hull.
"Tycho, hit the cruiser,"
Wedge ordered.
"I copy. On my mark, rogues. Launch torpedoes. Mark."
On Tycho's command, the X-Wings launched their missiles. Blue pinpoints of fire blossomed from various points around the graveyard and shot in at the Interdictor cruiser. Most of the proton torpedoes, beginning with the two Tycho launched, slammed into the port shield. They exploded into a silvery firestorm, then pressed in on the shield. The aggregator's shield did not collapse all at once. Gaps appeared, allowing a handful of torpedoes to skip through and blast into the ship's hull. Armored plates peeled off like dead, dry skin. And secondary explosions ripped gaping holes in the Interdictor's hull. Without waiting to pick up the ties or escape pods, the aggregator suddenly jetted forward and vanished into hyperspace. The mystery of the unexpected Carrick-class cruiser, named the Valiant, was solved when Tycho discovered that the unmanned ship had once been slave to the Alderaanian war frigate Another Chance, for which it had mistaken Tycho's X-Wing. Tycho's ship, which looked like the Chance, also used the Alderaanian ship's IFF codes. Still unsolved was the question of who had betrayed them. Fleury Voru had managed to keep his expression utterly impassive as Isene Isar dressed down Erisid Laret. Then Isar had screamed,
"High Admiral Teradoc has withdrawn the aggregator from my service, and that is your fault!"
Erisid exploded. "My fault? What algorithm did you use to calculate that conclusion?
The calculations were simple enough that I would have thought any provincial mind could have grasped them.
Isard's eyes narrowed.
Your pilots were on both the aggregator and the corruptor. Your pilots were supposed to deal with the snub fighter threat. They failed, costing me the corruptor, and now making me the laughingstock of the galaxy.
Begging your pardon, but the orders placing my pilots on those ships came from you. I asked you to use our elite pilots for the mission, but you picked a green unit that hadn't seen combat.
Erisi's blue eyes burned.
You sent them out after a unit that is arguably the best fighter squadron in the galaxy.
Isard raised an eyebrow.
Even with your participation, no longer needed or welcome?
The snipe seemed to pass unnoticed by Dlaret, but Voru had no doubt she'd catalogued it. He knew Erisi might pay with her life for her audacity. In the space of a heartbeat, he examined his options. Intervening on her behalf would open him to Isart's wrath, but the price might be worth it. Erisi and her family still had considerable influence within the Bacta cartel. Madam Director, you cannot discount the fact that the rogues clearly had planned against the eventuality of betrayal. Granted, an Alderaanian war cruiser is an antiquated ship, but coupled with the X-Wing squadron's strength, it was enough to make Captain Kongvarian pay for his recklessness. Voru caught Irisi's eye, and he felt he had earned her gratitude. He went on.
Antilles has always been cautious.
The precaution taken against our interference could have been nothing more than concern over whether or not he could trust his trading partner.
Yes, his trading partner. I want Card dealt with.
Voru shook his head. Under no circumstances, if we treat him any differently, he will realize we have an agent among his people, and we lose a very valuable resource.
Isard glared.
Antilles has defied me directly, and has killed one of my destroyers. I want him dead.
She turned her attention on Erisi.
You will plan a mission that punishes the Ashen for their boldness in resisting me. Find something. A munitions dump. A rebel camp. A sympathetic village. Anything. Find it and destroy it. No warning. No mercy.
Aiella drew her knees up to her chest and circled them with her arms. Derek would have found this place fascinating, she thought. In working with Elskull and the Ashen Resistance Group, Aiella had come to have a great respect for the Raetics. The buildings in their villages were created out of an air-dried mud and saliva mixture that the Raetics slathered on a twig and branch lattice. Because creating Bacta for healing was so much a part of Raetic society, it was a solemn decision for one of the species to become a warrior. Elskull entered the room with news.
The corruptor is no more.
Aiella's jaw dropped.
What?
Elskull had just started to explain when a howling shriek filled the air. Aiella dove and, lying on her belly, stared out at the Raetic village. Laser bolts hissed through the air, igniting the rainforest. Flaming branches fell on buildings and the forest floor. Raetics twitched on the ground, a limp for shelter, black blood streaming from their wounds. Because of his position half a kilometer due east of the oceanside cottage belonging to the Imperial Moth on El Chandrapika, Corin Horn saw the repulsor-lit limousine approaching first. The passenger, he knew, was Captain Ser Yonka, a long-time defender of the Empire. Now, Yonka was on his way to meet his secret lover, Aelin Jandi, the Moth's wife. What he did not know was that he would also be meeting the rogues. Slowly, Corin started working his way to the rendezvous point. Like the other rogues on the mission, he wore stormtrooper armor they'd gotten from Huff Darklighter, dyed dark blue so it blended into the night. He reached the rendezvous point in a little ravine northeast of the cottage and crouched between Uru and Rizati Inur. Across the way were Gavin, Wedge, and a tall Gan named Vivir Wiandi. Two members of the team waited in the spaceport with X-wings ready to cover their escape if things got messy. Wedge looked at Corin and nodded. Corin and Rizati went to the right, Oral and Vivier to the left, leaving Wedge and Gavin to go straight in at the open garden doors and into the back of the cottage. Wedge tapped his chronometer, then held up two fingers. Sir Yonker let himself into the cottage and smiled as Aelin moved toward him. The slight breeze from the garden brought the scent of flowers to his nose and playfully teased the skirts of her gown. For a half second, because the dark blue of the armor matched the color of Aelin's gown, the two blaster-toting figures entering through the garden doorway seemed nothing out of the ordinary. Only when Aelin opened her mouth to scream and the second figure shot her did Yonker realize they were not part of any surprise Aelin had cooked up for him. Yonker fought to keep his voice even.
"You needn't have had a shot, Ancillis."
"Wouldn't do to have witnesses, would it?" Wedge nodded toward her without letting his blaster waver from Yonker's direction. "She's only stunned. We could have killed her, but unnecessary bloodshed is not something we revel in.
Killing me will only have a minor effect on the avarice."
"I agree, Captain Yonker. I have not come to kill you. I've come to make you a very rich man."
Fleury Voru strode slowly down the ramp from the belly of his Lambda-class shuttle, then stopped as he saw Irisi Dlaret waiting for him at the edge of the landing pad.
"Commander Dlaret, so nice of you to greet me."
Irisi easily returned his nod.
"My pleasure, Minister Voru."
"Call me Fleury, beautiful Irisi. You were summoned too."
"Yes."
Irisi's voice sank into a harsh growl.
"The convoy that the avarice had been escorting appeared back in system, though three tankers were missing."
Voru nodded as they walked through the tall gray corridors. More interference by rogue squadron seemed to be the only thing that could make Isard so angry.
What was Captain Yonker's explanation of their loss?"
"I don't believe he offered any."
They stepped into the turbo lift, and Irisi gave Voru's arm a squeeze.
"Clearly, something went wrong. Now we just have to see who will catch the blame."
Voru punched the emergency stop button on the turbo lift before the doors could open.
"I ask you this, realizing I now place us at more risk than ever before. Do you feel, as I do, that Madam Director Isard is not viewing the same reality we are?"
Irisi's eyes narrowed.
"Do I think she is insane?"
"Yes."
"Quite."
Irisi twisted around and faced him fully.
"Antilles consumes her. If he is not dealt with shortly, she could destroy Tythera. This is not to say I doubt her ability to eliminate Antilles. She is most dangerous in that regard."
"But you would be in favor of having contingency plans that guarantee the survival of the Bacta cartel, no matter what happens to her?"
"Exactly. You've read my mind."
In her office, Isard brandished a holoprojector remote control. She glanced up as Voru and Irisi entered.
"Good. Commander Dlaret is here, too. I need only do this once."
She stabbed the remote at a receptor, and suddenly Captain Ser Yonker appeared life-size, standing before her. Yonker's figure bowed to the room.
"Madam Director Isine Isard, I regret not being able to bring you this message personally, but not that much. In the time I have been associated with you, I have found you to be sociopathically self-centered, prone to irrational and impulsive reactions, and prey to a preference for appearance over substance. I hereby resign your service and renounce allegiance to you and what you represent. The same goes for my crew on the avarice. I know your intent will be to hunt us down and exterminate us. However, I know of worlds and systems you could never find. seek out the avarice, and you will leave yourself vulnerable to enemies who can destroy you.
The image faded, leaving Isard staring back at Voru.
You once told me he had a mistress, this Captain Yonka.
Voru nodded.
Onel Chandrupika.
Have her killed.
As you wish, Madam Director.
Voru bowed, but he felt only contempt for Isard. They will have spirited Aelin Jandi far away by now, because it will frustrate you, he thought. Then said to her,
The Avarice's departure puts us in a curious position. Our ability to guard our convoys has been halved.
An eyebrow arched over Isard's red eye.
Obviously. Furthermore, we cannot guard our convoys and prevent an uprising by the Ashern here. In the face of this, I see only one clear choice. I believe it was you, Minister Voru, who noted that we could not destroy Antilles until we determined where his base was. Your reports have been that the search has been fruitless because Antilles and his people are very cautious in how they accept goods from outsiders. Antilles can operate without taking chances because we gave him time to do so. I intend to deprive him of that time. I have found a way to pressure Antilles and make Typhira more secure. I have put together an analysis of the Bacta production here and determined that the industry needs only 1.8 million vratix to operate all the facilities we have at 100% efficiency. This means there are 1 million surplus vratix on Typhira. I have ordered the roundup and internment of 1,000 vratix a day for the next 30 days.
Fatigue made Corrin's eyes feel as if Tatooine's twin sons had settled into his skull. He knocked at the door of Booster's office, but refrained from leaning against it lest he fall asleep on his feet. He and Ural had made a run to Typhira, hitting some interim systems along the way to make it impossible for the imps to backtrack them to Yagdul. A direct trip would have taken them 12 standard hours. Their course added another 12. The trip left him feeling like he'd spent the last 2 days in the belly of a sarlacc. Wedge, seated in front of Booster's desk, looked up.
You could have stopped to get a meal before you reported in, Corrin.
Sure, and have Booster think I care only about myself when I've been on an important mission like this, Corrin thought. Then answered,
The news kind of killed my appetite, Wedge.
You were able to confirm the reports from Typhira, then?
Booster asked. Corrin nodded. Much of the population of the Vratix village had been killed, though Ayala and Elskol had fought back fiercely. Corrin continued, It seems Isart has also initiated a program to gather up 1,000 Vratix a day, and is planning to execute them when she has 30,000 total. At that point, if Ashern resistance to her regime has not ceased, she'll collect more. Wedge put his hand to his forehead.
She finally thinks she's found a way to draw us out.
Corrin shrugged. I monitored public announcements and privately coded messages from Ayala and Elskol. Everything seems to indicate this program is a domestic one only. There has been no mention of us or what we've been doing.
Booster barked a harsh laugh.
You think she'd say anything directly about us? That would make us suspicious of a trap.
Corrin frowned. So, since she said nothing about us, it is a trap? You must have a conspiracy theory program working overtime on your datapad, Booster.
Wedge held a hand up to forestall Booster's reply. It doesn't matter what Isart intended, though I do think Booster is more right than you are, Corrin. The fact is, we have to act.
I wasn't saying we shouldn't act, Wedge. Corrin shook his head to clear his mind. I'm just saying it's not an obvious attempt to provoke us.
Korsak always did miss the obvious.
Booster snorted as he hit a couple of keys on his datapad.
Do we initiate things?
Can we?
Wedge's eyes narrowed.
Where do we stand on the refits?
The sensor and targeting units are all in place. I can have the launchers ready to go inside a week.
What about the gravity well projector?
On their visit to Card after the ambush at Alderaan, Booster and Mirax had been surprised when Card freely admitted that one of his people had betrayed them to Isard. But instead of going after the traitor, Booster had another plan. He wanted to use Melina to trap Isard. And since Card offered to make reparations, Booster asked him to find a gravity well, which he planned to use to the rogue's advantage. Booster said,
"Got it, and it's being installed now." "Good. Let's get things going. Call Card and set up a rendezvous for 24 hours from now."
Wedge glanced up at Corin.
"Will you be ready to lead a flight out to escort them in by that time?"
Corin hesitated, not certain he had heard correctly.
"Escort them in? We aren't going to work out some transfer?"
Wedge shook his head.
"No. Time is of the essence."
"But, Wedge, sir, begging your pardon, if we do that, Isard will know where we are. You're practically inviting her here."
Booster smiled.
"No practically about it, Corin. We are inviting her here."
Wedge turned to Corin. "I understand your concern, but you're not privy to the plans Booster, Tycho, and I have put together. We've been taking Isard's forces apart bit by bit, which certainly was part of our overall plan. But we had to make decisions about what to do if she forced our hand, and she has."
"Then tell me what the plans are, so I don't think you've lost your mind."
"Can't do that, Corsic."
Booster flipped his datapad closed with a click.
"You're going to go out and get the convoy and bring it here. If Isard decides to take our pilots hostage, she can't torture information out of you that you don't have."
Wedge nodded.
"And I need you to lead the escort flight, because Isard and her agent would not believe we were on the level if we didn't bring the flight in. I don't want to cut you out like this, Corin, but Booster and I have worked this out carefully, and the less you know, the less you can reveal if you're caught."
Corin felt a wave of weariness wash over him.
"I hear what you're saying, Wedge, but are you certain this is going to work?"
Booster roared with laughter.
"Certain? Of course he's not certain. A man who would only bet on certainty has no guts."
"I have plenty of guts, Booster, but I don't like risking them or my life or the lives of my friends if I don't have to."
"And you call yourself a Corellian? No wonder you joined Corsac."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"If you had guts, if you were even to imagine yourself worthy of my daughter, you wouldn't have spent your life in service to the Empire's puppet. You played it safe when men with real courage were out there defying the government."
Booster rose from behind his desk, his hands balled into fists. Corin's fatigue melted as his anger grew.
"Oh, you're going to use that smugglers are really patriots story to excuse your greed? Let me tell you something, Booster Terek. You can think of yourself as a noble scoundrel if you want, but the fact is you were out for money when you were running shipments, nothing more."
Wedge stood abruptly and posted a hand in the middle of each man's chest.
"All right, stop it right now."
He gave each of them a little shove, and Corin let himself be propelled back toward the doorway. Wedge turned to Booster, shifted both hands to the larger man's shoulders, and forced him down into his chair.
"Listen to me, Booster.
Corin Horn is one of the smartest, most skilled and courageous men it's been my privilege to know. He escaped from a prison that makes Kessel look like a resort world. He's done things on missions that put him at risk to save the lives of others. If not for him, Coruscant would still be in Imperial hands. And I, as well as your daughter, would be dead, or Isard's slave."
Before Corin could grin triumphantly, Wedge whirled and stabbed a finger into his chest.
"And you, my friend, need to get some perspective here. You're seeing Booster as your father's old enemy. Well, you aren't your father. Their fight isn't your fight. And you can't stand in for your father. And you should be smart enough to know Booster doesn't have a problem with you because you were Hal Horn's son. He's got the same problem with you that every father ever had with any man romancing his daughter. She's the best thing that ever happened to him."
Corin nodded.
"She's the best thing that ever happened to me, too."
"Right. Which means the two of you have more in common than either one of you admit. Now, both of you, think on this. Mirax loves you both. So unless you think she's got no taste or character judgment at all, you better figure you are worthy of each other's respect."
Wedge folded his arms. Corin looked up and met Booster's stare openly.
"Waiting to see if I break, aren't you?" he thought. "If I give in, I've betrayed my father. Or have I?"
Corin frowned as he contemplated his father and the life the man had led. Hal Horn had lived for years with the knowledge that he was really the son of a Jedi and subject to the extermination policy the Empire imposed on Jedi. Hal could have retreated to the hinterlands of some backwater world and become a hermit, but he chose to take on the duty his own father had assumed. A Jedi helped maintain the peace and uphold the law. Hal Horn did that by working with Korsak, even though his duties exposed him to the Emperor's Jedi hunters. Corin suddenly realized that his father's rivalry with Booster Terek had not been personal. He stepped forward and extended his hand to Booster. "You're not my enemy. Never have been. I'm not yours. For the sake of your daughter, the people we've got to save, and the memory of my father, I don't want to fight with you anymore. Doesn't mean we won't disagree, perhaps even violently at times. But you don't deserve my ill will." Surprise slowly dawned on Booster Terek's face. He started to say something, then took Corin's hand.
"Normally, I'd be angry that I'd misjudged you so badly. But you've reinforced just how good a judge of character my daughter really is."
Melina Karnes had hoped to be away from the Yagdul station as quickly as possible, but a delay in payment meant her ship was the last of the convoy to leave. Mirax's insistence that she leave her ship Empress Diadem and enjoy the station's facilities, in Mirax's constant company, meant she had no chance to send a message out to Typhara to report the location of Rogue Base. While it certainly was Mirax's fault that Melina had not been able to make a report sooner, the fact was that she hadn't wanted to notify anyone until her ship was outbound. Had she sent out the coordinates when she arrived, she would have been trapped on the station and killed along with all the others. On board her ship, Melina headed back to her quarters and sealed the hatch behind her. She opened a drawer on her datapad desk and pulled it out. She slid aside a finger-length wafer of Duraplast on the back panel, revealing a small cavity. From it, she pulled out a small, slender capsule, which she inserted into a transparent-steel bottle. Then she tossed it into the refresher station's bowl and evacuated it. The flush of disinfectant washed the flask into a holding tank. As the Diadem came about on its exit vector, the pilot hit a switch that dumped the tank's contents out into space. The fluid immediately froze into a mass of blue ice that slowly began to drift toward the system's sun. The drop in temperature around the flask prompted the instrument to start feeding data about its location. At the Flare Star Tapcalf, Corin reached across the table and took Murax's hand in his. "Thanks." She gave his hand a squeeze. "Buying dinner was no big deal." "That's not what I'm thanking you for. Seeing you sitting there, I remember the first time I saw you. Back on Talisea." Mirax smiled. "Yeah, the lighting is dim enough to resemble that world." He chuckled. "I was remembering how beautiful you looked then, and how beautiful you are now. And I remember you cut a rather dashing figure in your flight suit. And then I had to spoil it by bringing up the rivalry between our fathers." He grinned. "But we got over that fast. I remember our last conversation on Coruscant before we headed out to conquer a world." His smile faded. "And then I ruined what we were heading for by getting captured by Isar."
"Yet another crime for which she should pay."
Corin tightened his grip on her hand. "We've got something special going between us.
I think we should make it permanent." Mirax's eyes grew wide. "Lieutenant Corin Horn, are you asking me to marry you?"
"Look, I know this might seem abrupt, but I know I'm never going to find someone for whom I feel more than I feel for you. Will you marry me?" Mirax lifted his hand from the table and kissed it.
"Yes, I will, Corin Horn."
He slipped his hand from hers, then pulled off the gold chain and Jedi medallion he wore. "All I have to offer you is this." He held the medallion out by the chain.
"I know how much that medallion means to you. It's your good luck piece. I won't take it, especially before the coming assault."
"Mirax,
If this will keep you safe, it's better off with you. Because you're the most important person in the galaxy to me. Flirri Voru found it easy to read the emotions running through the two ship captains. The briefing Isine Isard was giving them clearly frightened Captain Laquivasha. Though the woman was taller and more muscled than Isard, she lacked Isard's commanding presence. Joak Drissel, by contrast, was small and blocky, with prematurely gray hair that matched his goatee. Despite his diminutive stature, he had an air of menace. Isard had chosen to wear her Red Admiral's uniform for the briefing, despite the heat and humidity.
There it is, then. You will be attacking an Empress-class space station at Yagdur. The armaments and shielding are minimal, though the chance that some upgrades are in place cannot be overlooked. I expect the station to be destroyed within 60 hours. Are there any questions?
Drissel nodded.
I have to wonder, Madam Director, why you are sending both the Lusankya and the Virulence on this mission. Even Minister Voru's most generous estimates of the Rogue's strength gives us a 2-to-1 advantage in fighters. And as good as the Rogues might be, they cannot hope to prevail.
Voru cleared his throat. You have forgotten the Alderaanian war cruiser?
Drissel shook his head impatiently. Its firepower is negligible. There is no need for the Virulence to come with me on this mission. Moreover, its departure from Typhira puts this world at risk.
Isard blinked.
At risk? From whom?
Antilles and his people. Now recall, his X-wings are hyperspace capable. If they bolt when we arrive, they'll have 12 hours to fly missions against us before we could possibly return.
Isard smiled.
I have the THDC to ward off the rogues. The Virulence will be going with you to guarantee you return.
I assure you, Madam Director, the Lusankya will return from Yagdul victorious.
I trust this will be the case, Captain Drissel.
She shifted her attention to Captain Varsha.
Understand this. The Lusankya is more valuable than you or your ship. You will do whatever you must to see to it that the ship returns. I consider you a shield between the Lusankya and disaster.
Captain Joak Drissel's sinister laugh filled the dark hollow of the ready room on the Lusankya. He didn't believe for an instant the fiction that Antilles and his people were outcasts from the New Republic. Theirs was obviously a mission meant to keep Isard bottled up until the rebels could deal with her. Isard took great delight in being subtle and tricky, but when she decided to wield a hammer, she did it clumsily. Unfortunately, her power is embodied by this ship, Drissel thought. But now this ship is mine. Thus is her power ceded to me. Drissel's comlink beeped.
Captain, 5 minutes to reversion to real space.
He strode out onto the bridge.
Report, Lieutenant Rosion.
The chief navigator looked up from the pit where he worked.
We're coming in as scheduled. The station is in orbit around Yagdul. It should be clear for an attack once we close into range.
Drissel walked to the viewing station. Yagdul and its three moons appeared as colorful spheres hanging in space. Silhouetted against the planet's gray face, the space station appeared insignificant and defenseless. Drissel's aide, Lieutenant Walroen, informed him,
Captain, we're showing signs of snub fighter deployment at the station.
Very well, tell Captain Arl he is free to deploy his fighters in a defensive screen. Have you spotted the Alderaanian war cruiser yet?
Negative. We are clear for 100 kilometers around us, and Virulence is reporting similar clearance.
Drissel watched the station grow larger. The scrambling of the station's snub fighters did not surprise him. It would be difficult for the X-Wings to work their way through his screen, and while engaging in dogfights, all but impossible for them to maintain the sort of cohesion needed to launch a crushing volley of proton torpedoes at his ship.
Thank you, Walroen. Please confirm they are outbound for Typhira.
His aide's surprise rang through his reply.
Yes, sir. That's it, exactly.
Good. They will arrive after 12 hours in tiny cockpits, short on fuel and sleep. The Typhirans can deal with them. We'll make certain they have no place to return to.
Laughter greeted his comment. Then the communications officer raised his voice above the din.
Captain, we have an incoming message from the station.
As the hollow projector image began to resolve into the form of a big man with an artificial eye, Drisso raised himself to his full height.
This is Captain Joak Drisso of the Lusanka. Your fighters have deserted you.
I sent the fighters on to play with something more their size.
The man posted his fists on his hips.
I'm Booster Turek, and this is my station. Your rate of closure puts you 5 minutes out from your preferred range for this sort of operation. I'll give you those 5 minutes before I destroy your ship.
You're rather bold, Turek, for having a station with minimal shields, a half dozen laser cannons, and 10 turbo laser batteries.
We've made some modifications to the station.
Turek nodded to someone outside the image area. Drisso felt the Lusankia rock a bit. He signaled for the transmission to be cut, then snarled at his aide.
What happened?
They powered up a gravity well projector. It's projecting a cone of energy in our direction. It can't hurt us. The bump was just our own gravity generators adjusting. Drisso frowned. The only thing the gravity well projector did was prevent them from turning and going to light speed while still in the cone.
Lieutenant Rosen, compute hyperspace solutions for me.
That will be difficult, sir. Because of Yagdul's density, the array of the moons and the gravity cone, we're severely limited in our choices. All we can do is run away from the plane of the elliptic until we escape the current constraints on us, then head out.
Drisso frowned. Ambush!
No, sir. The ships are outbound toward Typhara. Exit speed is consistent with that of the freighters or our own ships. Terek's image appeared again.
I notice you've stopped, Captain Drisso. Do you have surrender on your mind?
Drisso smiled. I do. Yours. Terek looked puzzled.
I guess you think we don't want to fight. Believe me, we do.
A much heavier tremor shook the Lusankia.
We have just powered up all of our tractor beams and have them on you. You can try to break free. But if you do, I've got to see a man about a guarantee he gave me.
You better hope he works fast. Rosian, engines full back. Break those locks.
Can't, sir. Helm is sluggish and those beams are powerful. Drisso snarled at Terek.
You give me only one choice.
Good. The terms of surrender are...
No, you fool. My choice is your complete destruction. Weapons, all bare on the station. Fire on my command.
His aide's face was full of concern. Sir, we have multiple proton torpedo and concussion missile sensors locked onto us.
How many?
Many, sir. Over 300. Warroan looked up. We're dead, sir. Drisso had been tricked. Antilles had anticipated the strike at the station. 2 kilometers off his bow, the virulence lanced upward, eclipsing the station. Suddenly, the Imperial Star Destroyer began to shrink, but it was only when Drisso saw stars flashing at the corners of his vision that he understood why. We're speeding away from the station, he realized. The virulence broke the locks by interposing itself between us and the station. The Lusankia's captain turned to face his bridge crew. Rosian, plot a course back to Typhara as fast as we can get there. Send virulence our thanks. Tell them their sacrifice will be remembered. A sacrifice that allowed us to destroy Wedge Antilles and hasten the Empire's rebirth. Warroan looked up at him, disbelieving. We're not going to help them, sir?
They're just doing their duty, Lieutenant. We now go to do ours.
By the time the Lusankia reverted to real space, Captain Drisso had constructed a complete rationale for his actions. It began with the premise that Antilles Station would have destroyed his ship. And only by returning home at flank speed could he be in position to meet the task force that he knew was headed there. But as the light tunnel melted into a scattering of stars, he saw the green and white ball of Typhara above him. No X-wing swooped about, no TIEs filled the void with laser fire. He saw only freighter traffic and a few system patrols. Drisso slammed a fist on the viewport. He'd been had by Antilles.
The feint at Typhara had drawn him off, causing him to sacrifice the virulence. Lieutenant Warroen's voice cut through the cocoon of mortification closing around Drisso's mind.
Captain, we have an Imperial Star Destroyer reverting to real space 25 kilometers to our aft.
Drisso looked over at the holoprojector pad.
Open a comm channel to that ship. Captain Varsha, how did you get away?
It took him a moment to recognize the holographic image facing him. But when he did, he felt a cold hand tighten around his heart.
Captain Drisso, I fear you've mistaken my freedom for your virulence.
Captain Drisso, the freedom is deploying snub fighters, X-Wings, and Uglies, Lieutenant Warroen said.
Captain Ser Yonka smiled at him.
Don't say you're happy to see me.
The abundant undergrowth around the Zucra corporate headquarters provided Ayala Wasiri and her people the means to get within 25 meters of the back entrance where THDC guards stood at the door. Suddenly, a full dozen THDC fighters roared out of their hangar, letting Ayala know that Wedge and his people had finally arrived at Typhara. She strode in the direction of the guards who were watching the fighters fly past. Ayala smiled as she reached the door.
Excuse us, ma'am, but you can't be here. Restricted area.
Oh, sorry.
Ayala reinforced her smile, then brought her blaster carbine up. She scythed fire back and forth. Two Ashen Vratiks emerged from the brush and raced to the landing. With their powerful legs, they kicked the guards' bodies aside. Brandishing blaster pistols fitted with adapters to accommodate their thick-fingered hands, they plowed through the door and stalked down the hallway. Wedge keyed his comm unit.
30 seconds to the first wave of ties. Remember, our goal is to get out of Lusankia, not to spend our time dogfighting up here. Two, stay with me.
As ordered, lead,
came Aesir Salar's reply. Wedge flicked his lasers over to dual fire mode, picked a target among the incoming TIEs, then dove away from the laser fire splashing against his forward screen. His maneuver prevented him from seeing what had happened to his target. But a target eliminated message flashed on his monitor. He opened the comm channel.
Tighten it up, rogues. Two more squadrons, then we should be clear to go in.
In his ship, Corrin suppressed a laugh. Only two more flights, lead? I count five, including one of Squint.
Agreed, nine. But there is a 2-minute gap between three and four, and another 2 minutes between five and the Squint. I thought we could use that time to down the Lusankia. With your permission.
Granted, lead.
Corrin hauled back on his stick as a pair of ties broke to follow his climb. His inversion brought him in below their flight arc. One of them tried to pull a quick loop to bear down on him, while the other dove to spot Corrin again. Corrin triggered two quad bursts of fire at the diving TIE. With the second burst, the twin ion engines blew through the cockpit canopy, then exploded. Corrin rolled away to port to escape the blast, then brought the X-Wing's nose around to starboard. The looping TIE came out of its maneuver and spitted itself on his aiming reticle. Corrin triggered a shot at it. All four laser bolts converged on its starboard solar panel. Then the TIE corkscrewed toward Typhara. Corrin heard Ulul's voice.
Ten has the next flight, nine.
Corrin tucked his X-Wing back in behind Ulul's fighter as the Gan downed two TIEs, including one that was riding Corrin's tail.
Great shooting, Ken.
Thank you, Nine.
Corrin pushed his fighter forward.
Come on, Oro. We've got a big target now.
Captain Drisso watched the holopad's display of the battle.
Helm, Freedom is trying to slash over the top of us. Roll us so we can track her.
Captain, if you do that, we'll expose our ventral surface to the snub fighters.
Drisso looked over at the beefy man heading up his gunnery command.
I know that, Helm. Guns, use our ion cannons on Freedom. I want that ship.
Fleury Voru had seen the TIE interceptors flash past the viewports of his office and knew the time had come to make his escape from Typhara. He collected a fistful of data cards and tucked them inside his tunic. Summoning two stormtroopers, he stepped into the hallway. He worked his way down the corridor while the stormtroopers shot out each holocam they passed. They emerged on the hangar level. Voru paused to listen.
Down around the corner, to the right. Hurry, I hear the engines powering up.
Obviously, someone else had decided to use his means of escape.